The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Save big money at Menards. Gorilla tapes, glues, and adhesives are perfect for jobs around the house, indoors and out. Gorilla Heavy Duty Construction Adhesive has a 100% waterproof formula that provides a secure bond on any surface. From trim work to landscape block to hanging mirrors, it's all-purpose and holds in 30 seconds. Pick it up for your project and head to Menards.com to see all of our great deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
Do you like pop culture?
I do.
I wasn't talking to you, Andrew.
Aw.
If you enjoy movies, television, all that kind of stuff, we have a lot of fun on Sif Pop Podcast, part of the Studio DNA Podcast Network. So you can come check us out every week. You can listen live or just download it to your podcast feed.
Every single week, Aaron breaks down the newest movies that are big in theaters, and I make funny noises. You could probably pick one of those that you would like. You can join us every weekend live by looking at Spreaker.com/StudioDNA, or you can find us in your podcast player of preference by searching for Sift Pop.
Hello!
Family Broadcasting Corporation, in association with the Studio DNA Podcast Network, presents What Else with Corey Mann, an interview podcast with your favorite artists. Here's your host, Corey Mann.
So I was trying to write down a great intro to A, impress the audience and maybe possibly impress you, but my pen ran out of ink because it was like singer, songwriter, author, advocate, mom, wife, TV host. What have I left off? What else are you awesome at? Just out of curiosity.
Friend.
All right, let me start over. Singer, songwriter, author, advocate, mom, wife, host, and friend. How are you, friend?
I'm actually doing well. I'm doing well because I'm healthy. I thank God for that. You know, I've got food in my fridge and toilet paper by the grace of God, but I'm a little stir crazy.
Yeah. This has been, like I told you previously, this has been great tracking down artists because you're kind of a captured tiger right now.
Right? There's nothing we can do. Like, we're just got nothing but time.
There's no, yeah, tell him I'm touring or tell him I'm busy writing my next novel or tell him. No. You're caught. You're busted.
Yep. Here we are with nothing to do.
So the purpose of this podcast is you and I have spoken many times on the radio, but it's in these little chunky brief segments. And I want you to be able to air out your answers and I want to learn more about you.
I love that.
So that's what we're going to do. Okay.
Okay. I'm ready.
First word in my notes is the word Seattle.
Oh, well, that's my heart. So if you hear a Southern accent, it's a learned behavior because I've lived in Nashville now for, goodness, over 20 years. But I was born and raised in Seattle, and all of my family live there still. And I'm a Pacific Northwest girl at heart. Like, I feel like I bleed rain. And I love everything about the city. It's beautiful. If you've never been, it just has the most gorgeous nature because it has all of it wrapped into one. Ocean and mountains, and you feel like you can breathe better there. It's just weird because the air seems cleaner. I don't know. There's no humidity either, by the grace of God. So it's just a beautiful place. Obviously, if anyone follows me on social media, they also know that I am a diehard Seahawks fan. So I love football, and I like really love it, but I especially love the Seattle Seahawks. So, goodness, coffee, Pike Place Market, the best fish in the world anywhere, I'm telling you. You've never had seafood like there.
Two places that, and I have been there, but I didn't go there at the time. I want to go back. Two places, Henry Art Gallery.
Yes.
which now I read as of today have posted 80% of their work online for us to peruse digitally.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Look at that. And that's then, incredible, actually.
I'm a fan of pop culture, so the Museum of Pop Culture is right up my alley. Have you ever been there?
Yeah, I have, actually. Like the Jimi Hendrix Experience?
Yes.
The Experience Museums that we talk about? Yeah. It's incredible. I think that's the other thing. It's funny because the music that I love is not necessarily the music people equate with Seattle, like Nirvana and Pearl Jam. Like, I remember when I was in college, I literally worked at a car dealership, and it was an Infiniti car dealership, and all of the guys from Pearl Jam came in, and I didn't even know who they were. Like, I was like, what's Pearl Jam? So that was a big Seattle fail on my part. But there's a really vibrant music scene outside of just what the grunge, which was kind of birthed there, but also tons of jazz, which came from Seattle way back in the day, and just a lot of great, incredible music and art. It's a very artistic city, so it's beautiful.
I don't want to blow past what you just told us, but I love I was working at a car dealership, Pearl Jam came in, I didn't know who they were. That's so great.
I was like, I'm so sorry. And I will tell you that they were really nice. Eddie Vedder, right? That's his name. I'm saying it right.
Yes.
Look at me. I'm still failing. But so nice and down to earth. I think that's the other thing I love about Seattle. There's no pretense. Like, you know, you've got Bill Gates and probably more millionaires in like one part of Seattle than maybe any other place because of Microsoft. But there's just very little pretense in the city. Everyone's very chill, and it's a different feeling. You don't have this like hierarchy feeling. I don't know if I'm saying it right, but you know what I'm saying. Everyone's kind of down to earth.
When did I forget that you've always been the king of the world? I try to take life back right out of the hands of the king of the world. How could I make you so small when you're the one who holds it all? When did I forget that you've always been the king of the world?
What kind of student were you?
I got pretty good grades because I think certain things came naturally to me. I wasn't good at like studying, but I was competitive, so I wanted to do well, really more rooted in my competitiveness than rooted in a love for learning. I wished that I loved learning more. Like, I loved my friends, and I did cheer, which is a terrible thing as a singer to do, but I didn't know I was going to be a professional singer when I was in high school, so I cheered in high school and I cheered in college. And it wasn't until I was like, oh, this is actually starting to affect my voice because I'm screaming, so I probably should stop. But I loved that part of school more than the learning part. But now with kids, it's so funny how you try to tell your kids how important this stuff is, and then they ask you that question that you just asked me. What kind of student were you, Mom? And you're like, I tried hard, you know. But hey, Lovey.
Yeah, it is tough. I have a 13-year-old. My daughter is out the door and married now, and she was a great student. I mean, we had to push her and keep her focused. This 13-year-old is a whole new ball game, and especially with this quarantine and being home, staying on task. I mean, it is let's just pray right now for the teachers of America and say thank you.
I mean, honestly, thank you. Big thank yous when we're allowed to hug again. Let's just know that I'm going to hug them tightly and say thank you so much. So, you know, I've got three kids, and my twin daughters just turned 13, so I feel you on that one. But my husband was an incredible student. Like, he was a 4.0, you know what I mean? So at least there's hope for at least some of the kids. But it's funny because my twins are, and then I have another little girl that is 9 now, Sadie. But Gracie and Bella, the twins, they're just night and day opposite. One of them I mean, she's convinced she's going to be president someday, literally. And she's like, I have to keep my grades above a 4.0. I'm not going to get A's. I'm going to get A pluses because I've got to get into a good college. And then I've got to get into law school. And then I'm going to be the president. And I mean, she's like on task. She keeps me on task. She's like a road manager for my life. But then the other one is like trying to do her studies, but she'll see a butterfly. You know, she's like, that butterfly is so pretty. And she just, it's hard for her to stay focused and on task. It's amazing that they were born only a minute apart because they are so opposite.
Are the twins anywhere nearby you right now?
No, they aren't.
You and I are going to parent out for a moment. What is your most frustrating parent thing with the 13-year-olds right now? You give me yours, I'll give you mine.
Oh, my gosh. I don't know that I can have one. I have to have one?
Just one.
You know, so we were really strict about cell phones. We didn't, they just got one for their 13th birthday. And even that, it's with full restrictions. You know what I mean? Like the phone shuts down at 9:30 p.m. It doesn't have Google. Like they don't have social media. So we've been pretty strict about that. But I think my frustration is this idea that certain things are so important for their survival. Like before they got a cell phone, I mean, it was every day this, we're not cool, we don't belong, we're that, they care all of a sudden so much about their friend group. And I remember caring about my friend group. I do. I remember caring, but maybe because I was that age a lot longer than I want to realize. And there weren't cell phones, and there wasn't even the internet yet, so the pressures were different. It was still a pressure to fit in. It was still a pressure to belong, but it wasn't the same overwhelming pressure of, okay, now they need this app, and they want this filter. And I'm just like, no, because I don't want you to look at your life through a filter and then think that the real you isn't good enough. I think that's our constant struggle right now. It's not just the electronics. I think it's the pressure to belong to me. That's so hard. And you try to instill in them these godly ideas. And even through youth, it's like youth group and church, all of their friend groups, and you try to control it as much as you possibly can. But that just desperate desire to belong is so real. And then we argue about it. And then they look at me like, I don't know what they're talking about. And like, I'm not cool. And like, I'm so out of touch. And then I have to be like, do you even know how cool I am? Just kidding. And then I'm like, wait, look at me. I'm actually trying to convince my kids that I am cool, which is the definition of not cool. So that's our life currently.
And that reminds me, my daughter's 22 now, but that totally reminds me of her being 13. I think that's a girl thing. Now I'm going to give you a boy thing. He just doesn't care. Just doesn't care, you know, and when you got to bring down the discipline, it's still, you know, you try to figure out, all right, what's going to cut him off at the knees? What does he love? But he just doesn't care. And, hey, pal, you left that pop can there. Oh, yeah. Yeah, so pick it up. Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Your room smells like, I mean, I don't even know how to make it comical. It smells. And I called him, and I should have prefaced this. I love my son. He's a godsend. Yes. But he is Beavis. He sounds like him. He acts like him.
Oh, my God.
And he has no reference of that. So when I say, hey, Beavis, knock it off. Well, who are you talking about, Dad? It's you. It's you in cartoon form.
It's you. You are him, and he is you.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. That felt
good. The difference between boys and girls is great. I know. And it's funny because when you're with girls, and the thing for me is that everybody said, oh, my gosh, just wait till they're teenagers. And I have to be honest with you. I would be like, oh, yeah. But inside I was like, well, that's what happens to your kids. But my kids are not, they're not going to do that.
Right.
Like, they're not going to go through that.
Right.
Because they're amazing. Because Gracie and Bella were the most compliant children ever on the planet. Like, they just did everything they were supposed to do. Everything the textbook said, they did. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's what happened. That's probably going to happen with your kids. And I'm sorry for you, but that's so not going to. And then, bam, turns out it most definitely happens with our kids. And I know that this too shall pass, but I would like for it to pass quickly.
I think there's medication for that. Yeah.
Your presence is my greatest weapon. Pushing back the darkness, breaking every chain. My worship opens up the heavens, crushing every stronghold when I speak your name. 'Cause your presence is.
Who told you, who first told you that you could sing?
You know, so growing up in Seattle, which, by the way, is the least churched city in the nation, only 1% of the population claim to go to church of any kind, so let that sink in. But I was raised in the church, so, you know, born into a Christian family, and my grandfather was a pastor for over 50 years. And so my parents raised me in the church, and I went to an amazing church that put a huge emphasis on children's music programs. So I was in a kids choir from the time I was 4 years old. So I kind of think I knew I could always sing, but my greatest cheerleader was my dad. And he still is to this day, embarrassingly so, which I know is actually, I'm not embarrassed. It's one of the greatest gifts that he has ever given me, is just that my dad believes in me and has always believed in me, has always told me and anybody who would listen that I am the greatest singer in the world. Like, he, you know, the way I got started in quote unquote professional music was, there was this singing group. I don't know if you've ever heard of them, but they were called Truth. And they were like the Christian Menudo, if you will. Like, they had rotating members, you know, and had been around for like 30 years. And they came to my home church in Seattle to do a concert when I was in my third year of university. And after the concert was over, my dad walked up to the director of the group and said, I, you know, you guys were wonderful and everything, but I don't know if you realize this, but the greatest singer in America just happens to go to church here. And the guy was like, oh, is that so? And he was like, oh, without a doubt. I mean, she is the greatest singer in America. And the guy was like, oh, well, if she's that great, let me hear her sing. And it was while they were tearing down and there were still people in the sanctuary. And he said, just go up there and sing me something. And I did. And that's how he offered me a job. I left university and went on tour with them for 2 years. And that really is the time that God used to kind of say, hey, this is what I have for you, like for your life. And I ended up moving to Nashville, and the rest is history. It's a lot longer story than that. But it was my dad that literally was like, okay, the greatest singer. And he still feels that way. And so he's really the one that was like, hey, you're not just a singer, you've got something special. And he's told me that my whole life.
The power of a parent and a father telling you you've got what it takes. A, that's number one.
Yes.
Two.
Yes.
You do not have to have a help wanted sign in the window to go do what you want to do. Like, that group didn't come to church and say, by the way, we're looking for someone. You and dad saw the moment and you took the moment. And, you know, what's the worst they can say is no. And you went ahead and did it anyway. I love that.
Yes.
Your stock with me.
Yes.
Just went up another level. I love that.
You know, for me as a parent, I remind myself of that because I think that one of the greatest failures in our culture, I don't want to put it all on dads. I don't, though I do think that a large majority of it is the missing father. I think that that component in a child's life, especially in a girl's life, that for me, I always knew I was valuable, I knew I was worthy, and I knew I was loved because my dad showed me that. And I think a lot of times, even our understanding of our Heavenly Father comes from our relationship with our earthly father, which is why so many people have their, you know, understanding of God so messed up, because they didn't have an earthly father that showed them unconditional love. And so for me, I feel like, number one, I have no excuse. I think that's a big, like, to whom much is given, much is required. I take that very seriously, because I have no excuse. I was well-loved, and my dad built me up every day. And so for me, that was the biggest difference maker. But I try to remind myself of that when it comes to my own kids. We actually, as a parent, we have so much power. The power of life and death is in the tongue, right? The Bible tells us that. And I can literally sometimes see, I don't do a perfect job, and sometimes I don't even realize, because I'm hot-tempered, I don't realize that my words cut, and that they cut so deeply. And you can see it if you're watching your kids. They carry our words like either like a heavy blanket, or they can carry our words like joy. And I can sometimes see how I could break my kid's spirit just with one simple word. And so I think that that's really powerful to remember, that even when a kid needs instruction and correction, that there is a way to do it that corrects them while building them up, instead of tearing them down. And I have not yet perfected that, but I still feel, by the grace of God, conviction when I don't do it well. And then I think the other thing that you pointed out, which is really important, because I get asked all the time, like, how do I do what you do? Or how did you get started? Or how do you do it? Or I've got this dream God's put in my heart, and I just don't know how to get started. And it's like a lot of people are paralyzed in the middle of their dream. They're paralyzed because they're waiting for, like, either God to talk out loud and give them a big, huge sign from the heavens, like, the time is now. Okay, I've prepared this. This is your open door. And I think that, and this is probably a deeper conversation, but one of the things as believers, I think, can really mess us up is when we talk about the will of God. Right? Like, the will of God is, okay, but I want to make sure that I'm doing God's will. Like, this is my dream. This is my passion. But I don't want to just run after my passion. I want to run after God's will. And my husband was in the midst of kind of like a life crisis. This is before I ever met him. And he was in a devastating, heartbreaking relationship. He was engaged to be married, and it broke off the month before they got married. And he was a mess, and he was on tour with Twyla Paris back in the day, if you remember it. He was her piano player, and they were on tour in California. He was kind of having a crisis of faith and this crisis of, how do I even know how to hear God? If I thought that this was what was God's will for my life, and I got it so wrong, and clearly I don't know how to hear God because I've messed this up, and, you know, that all of us at some point go through. And he was at a church, a pastor named Jack Hayford. But back in the day, he was just a really powerful pastor and author. And Bernie was like in this basement of this church, and the dressing room for the band guys was the church library. And it was early in the day, and he was in there, and he was weeping. And he heard the door open and close, and he didn't know who had come in. And all of a sudden, he felt a hand on his shoulder, and it was Jack Hayford. And he said, "Young man, why are you crying?" And Bernie said, "I just don't know how to hear the voice of God. I don't know how to figure out God's will. I don't know how to figure it out. I've screwed it up, and I don't know how to. I'm paralyzed. I don't know how to move forward." And he said, "God makes His will plain. Don't paralyze yourself in something that God never intended for you to carry." He made His will plain. He said, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind. And love your neighbor as yourself, for this is God's will for you in Christ Jesus." Like, that's His will. Rejoice in all things. Give thanks. Pray unceasingly. This is God's will for you. When you're taking care of the will that He has made plain, then you get to do whatever you want. Because when you're actually in His will, then your want to is going to line up with what he's already created you to do, and you'll screw up along the way, and you'll fall down, but his grace will pick you back up, and you'll walk through a door that you thought was an open one, and then it will close, but then you just keep walking. Instead of waiting for a door to open, you just keep walking. And when the door closes, you fall down, you get back up, and you keep walking. And that was so freeing for him. And for me, that mentality has literally been, ever since I've met my husband and he told me that story, that has carried me through a career that has ups and downs, record deals that I had that I thought was going to be like the game changer, and then the record company goes out of business, and then all of a sudden I don't have a deal anymore, and then I get another deal, and then that one goes out of business, and then I don't have a deal anymore, and you're like, wait a second, this must not be God's will. No, I'm taking care of what God made plain to me, and then I'm just going to keep walking. I'm going to keep walking through a door, and eventually what he's made me to do will come to fruition, not because I heard some big voice on high, but because I was unrelenting in pursuing what it is that was my passion. And I think that that has been so freeing for me, and also is what has helped to give me longevity in what it is that I love to do.
Speaking of Bernie, I don't know if you remember this or not, but I'm a huge Jimmy Fallon fan, and that was a daily watching when I get home. And so, you know, we had DVR back then. So I'm watching one night, and Josh Groban is singing, and I'm staring at the TV, and I literally open your Instagram and start comparing the piano guy on the TV to your husband. Back and forth and back and forth. And then I finally went, I'm just going to text her. Is that your husband on Jimmy Fallon playing right now? And you were so gracious. You're like,
I remember that.
Yeah, that's him. And then you follow up with a picture of Jimmy and Bernie. Lord.
So I got to tell you something that I think will make your love for Jimmy Fallon go up even more.
Bring it.
So, because I'm the same. Like, I love Jimmy Fallon. Like, I know that he doesn't know it yet, but I'm sure we would be actually just really good friends. We would just have a great hang. I'm just convinced of it. And I think that's the rest of America, and that's why Jimmy Fallon is Jimmy Fallon, because he makes you feel like, yeah, that guy's totally going to be my friend. So Bernie, we're talking about, he's the piano player, which is an important role, but he's not the artist. Like, we know how this works, right? So Bernie's there because he produces Josh Groban, and Josh was like, hey, will you come play for me on Jimmy Fallon? And so Bernie's in, like, you know, Josh is in his dressing room, and then they've got some other, you know, dressing room at the Tonight Show for Bernie and the band. Jimmy Fallon knocks on the door while Bernie's in the dressing room. It's like, hey, I just wanted to take a moment and thank you so much for being here. Like, I'm just so honored that you would take the time to come to the show. Can I get you any coffee? Can I get you any refreshments? Are you all taken care of? Like, Jimmy Fallon did that. And Bernie was like, wait, are you kidding me right now? Like I'm just the piano player. And yet he took the time to go to every person to thank them for giving of their time to be on his show and how much it meant to him. And Bernie goes, he wasn't just doing it. Like, he's full of sincerity. And you can tell that he wakes up every day and says, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is my life. Like, can you believe it? Can you believe I get to go do the Tonight Show? Like, how amazing is this? Like, he's never lost the wonder of it, which I think is so important. When you make it to, like, that level, to just never lose the wonder that you don't deserve it, but by the grace of God, you get to do it, and that it's a gift. He has that. And I'm, like, forever a Jimmy Fallon fan.
Okay, we're gonna take a hard turn, because we had some fun there. Okay. I don't know that I've ever heard this story. Why is human trafficking such a thing for you?
Wow. Okay, so in 2004, I was on a day off from touring, sitting in my family room watching my favorite television show, which was Law and Order Special Victims Unit.
I get that.
So I love that show, and the thing I love about it is that they say every show is ripped from the headlines. It's based on, even though it's a fictional depiction of, but of a real story. And I'm just sitting there watching my show like I normally do. And they start depicting these young girls, like 13 and 14 years of age, being sold out of the back of a van in New York City. And they were being forced to do the horrific in these, like, you know, wealthy businessmen's homes and being held in their basements. And I'm just like, I can't explain it except for that something inside of me went, this is ridiculous. This is not real. Like, they say that every episode is based on a real headline, but there are not children being sold out of the back of a van. Like, I've bought a knockoff Louis Vuitton out of the back of a van in New York City. They're not selling children. You know what I mean? That was my thing. And because I do have like a justice freak kind of like thread through my personality, I kind of was annoyed. I was like, okay, this is ridiculous. But there was, as the episode went on, there was just something in me that was like, what if this is actually real? Now, again, this is 2004. I had never even heard the term human trafficking before. So I literally Googled, what is human trafficking? And a report came up that was the Trafficking in Persons Report that the United States government puts out. And like, I don't really know how to read a full government report, but I clicked on it to open it and I could understand it enough to realize that not only was this a problem and was it real, but our government was putting out reports about kids and which countries were the worst and how Thailand had it in their tourism brochures that you could get underage kids. And I'm just sitting there like, there's no way. There's no way this is happening. And then I started to get angry. Like, why don't I know about this? Why aren't people talking about this? We're talking about kids here. We're not talking about, this isn't prostitution we're talking about. This is the most innocent among us being ravaged. And just something inside of me begins to get angrier and angrier and angrier. And I literally then Googled faith-based organizations that fight human trafficking. And at that time, there was only one that came up. And I clicked on, you know, their page and I started to read what they do, and they worked in India, and there was an 800 number. And Corey, I was like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do, but I just, something in me was like, you are supposed to call them. And so they were closed because this was on a Wednesday night or whatever. So I literally hardly slept all night. I'm trying to explain to my husband, like, I watched this TV show, and I never thought I would say Law and Order changed my life, but it turns out it actually changed my life because that's where it started. The next morning, I called that 800 number, and I'm bawling my eyes out, and I'm like, oh, I was watching Law and Order last night. The lady was like, okay, honey, like, oh, that's right, they did the human trafficking episode. Why don't we just start with your name? And I said, my name's Natalie Grant. I'm a singer, and I think I can. And she was like, wait, did you say your name is Natalie Grant? And I said, yes. And she said, you're a Christian singer. And I said, yes. And she said, I was just at your concert last week. And this organization was based in Portland, Oregon, and I had just done a show in Portland. And I was like, of all the places in the world on the internet that I could call, like, that for me was the first kind of God clue, like, okay, this is, you're on the right track. 3 months later, my husband and I went on a trip with them. That organization was started by a former U.S. Congresswoman, and she took us to India. And I will never forget, we got off the plane, went straight to the red light district. I saw twin little girls that couldn't have been more than 5 years of age, and they were for sale on the street corner. I looked up in a second story window. I saw a child in a cage, literally in a cage, in a window. And I remember grabbing my husband's hand saying, just look up, like just look up. I was frozen in place. Because there was a couple of things for me that stood out. One, there was a kid in a cage. Two, she wasn't screaming. Like, she wasn't screaming for help. She wasn't screaming. And nobody was stopping and, like, gasping and horrified that there was a child in a cage. They were just walking by like it was no big deal. And I remember asking the man, the Indian man that we were with that ran the organization there in India, why is that child in a cage? And he said, she must be new because when they get in a new child, they put them in a cage to break their spirit. And oh my gosh, I've told this story like 150,000 times, and I still cry when I tell it, because I can see that child's face. Like, I can see her eyes, how hollow her eyes were. They thought that my husband was the organization we were with. We were able to go into a brothel during the daytime hours when they weren't working, because they thought that my husband was a potential customer, and we were American, and so they wanted us to come in. And I remember walking by these little dirty rooms. Like, some of them had just a blanket on the floor. Some of them had mattresses, and some of them had beds. And this one room had an old four-poster bed in it, and there was a rope tied to the end of one of the posts on the bed. And I remember saying, I actually can remember this like it was yesterday. I said, "Why is there a rope?" And he said, "Because in this room is a teenage girl that has a toddler, and they don't have any child care. And so she has to tether her child to the bed while she's forced to service clients." And something in me, I don't know if you would call it like a righteous anger, or something happened in me. It became more than just, okay, this is like a cause, and I'm a singer, and singers use their platforms for causes. This became something for me that was going to, I knew in that moment, this will be a life's mission. Like, this isn't, we're talking about just some sort of evil. This is the evilest of the most horrific evil that exists. These are children that are so young and so innocent that are forced to do the unthinkable day after day after day after day. And so I knew that, okay, I don't know what I can do, but maybe the first thing I could do is raise money to build an aftercare facility so that that girl, that this is her reality, that doesn't have to be the reality for her toddler. And so that's actually how it started. That's the first thing we did. We raised like $150,000 through my concerts. We sent it to the organization in India, and they built an aftercare facility that housed 300 kids. And so that was how it started. And then I decided to start my own nonprofit, and I said, okay, we're just going to keep doing that. We're going to find project-based things, and we'll do kind of like on a project-by-project basis. And it's funny how I feel like there's a couple of things about this story that are important. One, that this issue isn't just my issue, but it's something that should make righteous anger kind of well up in every single one of us that have a heart beating on the inside of us. But also, all of us have something that God has for us to do that's bigger than ourselves. And it doesn't mean that everyone needs to go out and start a nonprofit. It might be just something as simple as, you know, paying for somebody's groceries in line because you just feel like they're hurting, or doing something simple through a soup kitchen in your city. Or all of us have something that God's called us to be a part of that's bigger than ourselves. And he doesn't always give us the details. He just asks for obedience. And for me, starting this, I was like, I hold a microphone and sing songs. And I mean, what do I know about starting a nonprofit, and how do I run it, and how does it work? And I just knew that I was to be obedient, and that it would all work itself out in time. That was back in 2005 that I started that. God sent me like a woman that I partnered with that was a stay-at-home mom of six kids, and it just kind of started. Like, she's like, I'm going to give up my time to, you know, serve this and do this. And again, we just served projects by project basis. And then it just kind of began to grow through the years. Weird doors, crazy doors started to open. Like, hey, would you come meet the president of the United States? That's how I met Barack Obama. And he was doing a thing on human trafficking at, he was giving a State of the Union address about it, and they invited nonprofits to come. And I don't know how I got on that list. We were just a tiny little organization. I don't know how I got on that list, but those doors started to open, and all of a sudden the organization started to get, people started to notice it. And all of a sudden we started to get more calls of, oh, hey, could you do this? Could you help with this? And then in 2013, we merged with another organization and we became known as Hope for Justice. And what started as Law and Order and turned to this passion is now in 22 different countries on almost every continent on the planet. Last year, we helped 76,000 kids. We reunited 3,000 kids with their families. Like, again, I'm saying this as if it sounds like I had something to do with that. I still hold a microphone and stand on a stage and sing songs and tell people about it. That's what I can do. I'm not the one busting down the doors, although I want to, but I'm not the one that's going in and doing the raids. I'm not the lawyers that are prosecuting the traffickers and putting them in prison. There's teams that work for us that are doing that. The point is, I said yes to something that kind of God spurred in my heart. And I think another thing, Corey, is that God is always speaking. I'm not talking about out loud speaking. I've never heard him speak out loud. I've been listening for a long time. I've never heard like a big, Natalie, I am your father. Like, I've never heard that. But he's always speaking in our gut, that gut level instinct, that inner voice, you know what I mean? And I think that he's always speaking, but the question is, are we always listening? And are we always looking for God in the everyday instead of thinking we have to be in a church, at an altar, or in our prayer closet, whatever that even means. You know what I mean? Whatever that means for someone. For me, it was through Law and Order. And God was speaking to my heart. And it turned into this thing that is literally setting thousands of people free. And I think that it's not that I'm heroic. It's that I was obedient to the still small voice. And I think that God is calling every single one of us to be a part of something that's bigger than ourselves.
As Law and Order was to you, maybe you right now will be someone who's listening to this and it'll be their next step. If I wanted to learn more, point me to a website or something right now.
Yeah. It's hopeforjustice.org. Again, it's really easy. Just hope for justice.org. And there's many ways to become involved, and we're in several different parts of the world. Also here in the United States, our U.S. headquarters are here in Nashville. And again, it's just amazing, like the people that God has sent us. Like right now, the director of the U.S. office used to be second in command at the FBI. And you're just like, how does that even happen? Like, I don't even know. Last year, I got to speak before the United States Senate. And I just remember sitting there like, I'm looking at this entire Senate of Foreign Relations Committee, and I'm there in front of them, and all of these experts are speaking before me, and it gets to me. And I'm like, I literally said, I don't know how I got here. Like, I sing for a living, and I sometimes talk, but I've never been more nervous in my life, so I'm just going to tell my story. And I told them what I just told you. And to see these, you know, Democrats and Republicans alike taking off their glasses, wiping their tears, looking at me saying, this is for all of us. This is a job for all of us. And it's not just the job of the government. It's the job of the church, because nobody serves the downtrodden better than the church. And I'm just sitting there going, how did I even get here? Like, how did this happen? But again, it's just that walk through the door. Just keep walking. Walk through the open door. Just keep walking. And God's going to shut those doors that need to be shut. He's going to open those doors that need to be open. Our job is just to be obedient and keep walking.
You were made to shine. You were made for life. Even if you've lost your way.
The word postponed is all over your website because of tour dates, and you've seen that word before in your recent past.
Yes.
Did you get mad at God when the cancer happened to come right at the moneymaker? I mean, your vocal cords. Did you have a shake your fist at God moment? Where are you at with that?
It's really funny because You know, it's, I don't say this in a way that is, it's, I don't think it's wrong when people question God. I really don't. Number one, he can totally handle it. Number two, we have example after example. That's one of the reasons that the book of Psalms is one of my favorite books of the Bible, because he's an emotional bat, like King David and Asaph and some of the other writers, Isaiah, people that have written in the Psalms, they're emotional basket cases. I mean, all you have to do is just read through the Psalms. Life is either amazing, God is great, he's awesome, he's on the throne, he's in control, or why have you forsaken me? Have you shut the door on your compassion to me forever? Like, why are you leaving me alone? Like, these, for me, are encouraging because you see humanity and you also see yourself in that, at least I do, because I'm up and down every day, that roller coaster of emotion. And also, when that's included in scripture, that shows me that God's totally cool with it. He can totally handle it. I don't ever struggle with necessarily getting mad at God. I don't blame him sometimes for the things that I go through, but I get afraid. And I always have a process of, I'm afraid, why is this happening? Why are you allowing this to happen? I've dedicated my life to you. I've dedicated my gift to you. Like, I don't even, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with mainstream music. We need more believers doing it, but it's just not what I'm made to do. So I've given my life to sing about the hope of Jesus, and why on earth would you take that from me? I don't understand. It's like a process I work through. And then it's funny to me how scripture is just as true today as it ever has been. It's just as relevant today because you see it play out in your own life when you give it the opportunity. He will work all things together for good. He does it every time, even in this midst of this coronavirus, horrific people dying, people afraid, people losing their jobs. I mean, I'm currently unemployed, Corey. My band, unemployed. My crew, unemployed. All of these people that are banking literally and figuratively on me to continue. Right now, none of us are working. We are all unemployed. But the thing that I have learned about God because of my life experience tells me so. He's going to turn this around. He's going to. He's going to. I don't know how long it's going to take. That's not up to me. But he's going to turn it around. He always does. And one of the things I learned back in October of 2017, when I had thyroid cancer, that cancer tumor was pressing on my vocal nerve. And they said to me, hey, we're going to go in. We're going to get the cancer out. You're going to be fine. You may never sing again, because where your tumor is right against your vocal nerve. It may paralyze your voice. You're not going to have the same range. You're not going to have the same strength. I mean, all of these things. Now, obviously, by the grace of God, my voice actually came back stronger. Mm. It's stronger now than it ever has been. So God delivered on that. But before I ever knew that he was going to deliver on that, for me, the biggest miracle came in what I learned right before my surgery, and that is my outcome does not determine his goodness. Like, he's not a genie. Like, so often we seek God's hands before we seek his face. We seek what he can do for us, and just instead of just who he is. And for me, coming to that place of, okay, I'm resolute in my heart. I've made peace with this. My outcome doesn't determine his goodness. If my voice doesn't work, he's still good. If my voice works, he's still good. If I get to go back to touring, he's still good. If the touring industry, which I believe will come back, but I do think that there's going to be some really hard things that come out of this, and I think that some of it's not going to look the same way as it did before, but he's still good. Like, he's still good, and he will still work it together for my good. Like, even when you don't feel it or see it, that's where your faith comes in. I say this all the time. In the good times, be building your faith. Because when the hardship comes, you don't want to be building your faith during the hardship. You want to be standing on your faith during the hardship. That's why it's important to build it when times are good. It's important to build your understanding of who God is and how he works through our faith. Because right now, I'm unemployed and I'm standing on his goodness because I know he's going to work it out. Corey, I love talking with you. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Thank you. Until next time, okay?
Yes.
Thanks for listening to What Else with Corey Mann. Production elements and voiceovers by audiblegenesis.com. Engineered by Phil Souza. Executive producer is Danae Hughes. In partnership with the Studio DNA Podcast Network. Interested in your own podcast? Contact Danae@studiodna.media. What else? Previous podcast episodes and interviews available on iTunes, Spotify, and Spreaker.com. Hit subscribe so you don't miss an episode. Leave a review too. Find complete podcast tools and production at audiblegenesis.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Save big money at Menards. Gorilla tapes, glues, and adhesives are perfect for jobs around the house, indoors and out. Gorilla Heavy Duty Construction Adhesive has a 100% waterproof formula that provides a secure bond on any surface. From trim work to landscape block to hanging mirrors, it's all purpose and holds in 30 seconds. Pick it up for your project and head to Menards.com to see all of our great deals going on now.
Save.